Hi, I'm Philip Shepherd. It's my pleasure to welcome you to this amazing once-in-a-lifetime conference, and especially to the Meditation and Breathwork channel, which I'm proud to be sponsoring because meditation and breathwork are essential to my teachings. I'm the founder of the Embodied Present Process, or TEP, which is based on my two books and is taught worldwide. And here's one thing I believe about meditation and breathwork. You limit your experience of both if you imagine that your mind is just the thoughts in your head. Your mind permeates your every cell. Every stirring of energy within your body is an expression of it. So, if you wish to calm your mind, the most direct route is to develop the skills that enable you to feel the body's energy and ground it in the spaciousness of the present. That's what my work is about. If that appeals to you, I hope you'll check out my two presentations, one on this channel and one on the main stage. You might also be interested in a special offer exclusive to the Embodiment Conference to listen to one of my embodied meditations for yourself for free. You can find a link to the special offer in the description of this presentation or on the show notes. And now, enjoy the presentation.
Welcome to Rosalba, our presenter for this session on the psychophysiological dimensions of dysfunctional breathing and how breathing dysfunction impacts on meditation experience. Rosalba, given the level of stress and fear during this pandemic and its effect on so many, there can be no better time for understanding around the impact of dysfunctional breathing, not just for our meditation practice, but I would think for life in general. So it's great that you're sharing this today. I know you've been a little bit about your background. I know you've been a very highly regarded here in Sydney, but also around the world as an osteopath, naturopath, and breathing practitioner for over 40 years in clinical practice. During this time, you obtained your PhD, if that wasn't busy enough, and raising beautiful boys. You obtained your PhD on dysfunctional breathing, and you've got a passion. We've shared this at a number of conferences, a passion for all things breath related. I love that you combine the wisdom of ancient practice with what is now an enormous body, you must be thrilled, of scientific research on the value of optimal breathing and therefore the importance of understanding what causes dysfunctional breathing and the many ways that breathing heals. Rosalba, everyone, has been published widely in scientific literature and published chapters in several books. In her many years of wisdom and experience presenting internationally, that wisdom is what she offers in many of her now online trainings, links that you'll find at the end of this presentation. But fortunately today, all of that wonderful wisdom and body of knowledge she's accumulated over that time, she generously shares with us today in this webinar. And so we thank her and invite her to share with you. And I invite you to remember throughout the webinar to relax, to breathe, to remember your embodiment practices, and take in all this wonderful information and knowledge from Rosalba. Thank you again for being here, Rosalba.
Oh, thank you so much, Janine, for that very generous kind introduction. So here I go. Let's get started. Right. So sorry about the long, complicated.
Okay, so I'm just checking, Yolanda, if we've frozen.
So I think it's Rosalba that's frozen. She's I assume
Heidi. Let me just call her. So
yeah, give her a call. Meanwhile, do you want to type in the chat where you are, how you're feeling today? You know, what time is it where you are? We find out the what's happened to Rosalba's internet. So we've got someone, Queensland, Australia. It's 6 a.m. So you're here in England. Just past one in Malaysia. Welcome from Malaysia. And 10 p.m. in California. And how are you feeling today? What have you enjoyed from the conference so far? And personally, I've really enjoyed the Sufi dance with Dunya the other day. And Camille's Love, Power, Peace was wonderful. Yeah, that's just my channel because, you know, I tend to big up the meditation channel a little bit. You might notice. Greetings from Finland. You just got some snow. I'd prefer snow to what we've got here. It's just a bit grey and miserable here in England, but, you know, that's England. That's what we've normally got.
So we've got slight interruption with our internet for Rosalba, who actually, if you weren't here earlier, is only just like, I could run over there or she could run over here. Not quite that close. Anyway, her trusty husband is looking at the connection, and she'll be back with us shortly. So it's really nice, as you say, you landed to get a sense of where everyone's at and maybe even like what you're really looking forward to about this, what your relationship with meditation and or breathing is. And again, if you weren't here earlier, we were all talking about how things didn't really come together with timing wise, not just for a number of other panelists, but our highly esteemed and highly experienced Peter Levine.
Yes.
And Mark had to do some like, oh, what happens when things don't go quite right? I'm just getting a chat.
It's difficult when you're scheduling people all around the world in different time zones. Like, you know, even the top presenters can turn up 15 minutes late, like Peter Levine last night. We had one or two people that coming in late for their sessions as well. But luckily, touch wood, everyone's shown up so far. Oh, so Amber's saying, would love to know what is functional breath. Well, you're in the right place. Rosalba Courtney has got a PhD in dysfunctional breathing. She'll definitely be able to tell us. Sasha Iacovella on Buteyko. Yes. Now, to be honest, Buteyko is how I found Dr. Courtney. I looked up, you know, who the top Buteyko teachers are, and she was the person who introduced Buteyko to the UK, or is at least credited for it on one website or another. I work in
a... So we've had a chat to Rosalba. So she's still just trying to resolve that. But we can take this time as is the... she will hopefully be in a few minutes. But we can take a moment to sort of share people's experiences around the breathwork. But certainly Rosalba and I have connected over many years, being a somatic breathwork practitioner of some 30 years. We've been colleagues at conferences and shared some wonderful times together around that. So Buteyko. So I loved Gabor Mate. So we could take this time. Don't know how everybody's traveling. Someone said Bahor ratio isn't scientifically proven. Rosalba does the science on breathing. I'm work experientially and therapeutically. I don't know what your practice is, Yolanda, but I love the science. I love how after so many years of us having anecdotal evidence of the healing power and transformative power of breath work, that now the science is just, there's just an abundance of research now from the scientific field that validates optimal breathing. And as I shared with Rosalba, there can't be a more important time than now to be really focusing on and ongoingly resetting your nervous system using your breath consciously is a powerful way to do that, because we're all, no matter our mindset around what's happening for us. We're impacted by the cultural, it's international, so we're worldwide experience, which is pretty profound. So you're using your breath consciously to reset the nervous system and really ongoingly engage the parasympathetic versus being in that sympathetic and highly charged state all the time is a good idea. So I hope Rosalba's breathing as she does this, because I don't think there's anything more stressful than, I don't think there's anything more stressful than trying to work with technology and breathe and come back on. Yeah. So she'll call if she does come back on, but we have an option if we could go into a self-care, we could go into a short breathing exercise if you'd like to do that. One of my key focuses with breath work is to access our, what I think is our most natural state, which is joyful relaxedness. So I invite people to breathe into and access joy. Sometimes we think everything, so many other things are far more important. It becomes really low on our list. You know, really make it, you know, the importance of coming from a joyful space, i.e. lightheartedness, not just a frivolity, but a really soulful, centered space of deep gratitude, of wonder and awe to be alive. You know, I think it's, well, there's evidence and research, again, that was done many years ago, that when we operate from that way of being, we're at our most attractive. I'm in. Can you let me in? Oh, yes. Let's not have her. Bless. Ah, wonderful. We're just talking about joys and delights. So here's a joy and delight that she comes in. So, yes, let's remind ourselves not to be in a stressed state about what's happening. It's our response to events. So we just did some breathing. Wonderful. You made it.
Oh,
over to you, Rosalba.
Easier said than done.
Okay. Over to you. Thanks, everyone.
Okay, I'll go back to sharing my screen. Sorry about that. Took longer than usual to reboot. Oh, sorry, the host has disabled participant screening, so you'll have to make me able to share my screen again. Okay. Yolanda, can you let me share my screen?
Yes, you should be able to share the screen now.
Oh, great. Okay. Terrific. Sorry, we lost a little bit of the setup there. Okay, here we go. Back to the first one. Right. So, yes, human breathing is unique. So humans breathe differently, and breathing becomes disordered because of speech, the fact that we need to interfere with our breathing to speak, and also by the fact that we've got these busy, complicated brains and therefore more complex emotions that are linked with, you know, thoughts. So breathing, as we know, is conscious and unconscious. So with one of the things that's unique about human beings as well is that both, you know, conscious and unconscious drives coming from the higher brain, they can override what's called subcortical breathing control. So a lot of our breathing is driven from the brainstem, and it responds to changes in our chemistry, changes in the state of the muscles, stretch receptors in the lungs. These sort of automatic triggers, you know, that are in the brainstem would keep our breathing sort of very regular and even. But then the higher brain, consciously, we can decide to breathe differently, to modify and moderate our breathing, and unconsciously, just thoughts and feelings will change our breathing from these unconscious drivers coming from the brainstem. So, as I'm sure pretty much anyone who is attending this wonderful embodiment conference knows, that breathing is one of the most commonly used tools, you know, a higher brain tool for healing and for self-regulation. And there's been quite a lot of research about the ways that breathing works. Everyone knows breathing works. So for millennia, humans have used the breath, you know, for the practice of present moment awareness, for mindfulness, and for embodiment. So those words might be more modern, but these concepts, you know, have probably been there from caveman times, woman times. So what the recent research is showing is that, you know, the breath does interesting things like shift, changes the way our brain is functioning. So it shifts us out of default network, you know, the kind of worrying, preoccupied, self-referential brain. Focusing on the breath takes us out of that. It helps to turn on the prefrontal cortex, you know, our higher commander brain. Okay, it shapes the pattern of neural activity in all sort of interesting patterns and ways. So the patterns of our brain activity reflect the patterns of our breathing activity, particularly as we'll talk later on in this presentation, if we're breathing through our nose. So we also know that our breathing affects, you know, our autonomic nervous system, including the central autonomic network and also the vagus nerve. And of course, breathing regulates chemicals in the body, things like oxygen, carbon dioxide, nitric oxide, and in fact, our pH. So the effects of all these changes are healing, right? So, but also improving our focus, improving memory and learning, improving things like anxiety and depression, helping us become calmer, and helping us actually feel in control. But the higher brain can also be the origin of breathing dysfunction in a way that perpetuates dysregulation. So every thought we have, every feeling that we have, changes our breathing. Because thinking is a type of inner speech. So when we're very calm, our thinking doesn't change breathing very much. But if we have a very busy brain, our breathing starts to change in response to busy mental activity. And there's been research done showing that pretty much every feeling and feeling tone has a sort of a breathing signature to it, which is all well and good until we're overloaded. So when mental factors, emotional factors, or factors to do with physical overload from our environment or disease itself, you know, all of these things add up to being stressors if they're too much. If they become too much, they become a type of stress called allostatic load. And when allostatic load is too great, what happens is that breathing isn't well regulated anymore and it becomes dysfunctional. So when you say the word dysfunctional, people wonder, you know, what does that mean? Depending on what school of thought and what type of breathing practice you follow, then you might say, okay, well, you know, a dysfunctional breathing is when you can't breathe deeply or freely. Or some people might say it's when you can't control your breath and breathe shallowly enough. Some people would say that dysfunctional breathing is when the breathing is very asynchronous, you know, and not well coordinated and maybe excessively thoracic or in the upper rib cage. Some people would say that dysfunctional breathing is when it's very irregular or when people can't perceive their breath well or the breathing is irregular and chaotic or when breathing is excessively uncomfortable. And it's actually all of these things. So it's very, very common. So dysfunctional breathing is very common but overlooked. And some of the research says that at least 1 in 10 healthy people have some degree of dysfunctional breathing. And there's certainly a lot more in people who have particular diseases like respiratory diseases. With COVID, people recovering from COVID, we can see a lot more dysfunctional breathing because of the damage done to the lungs from this disease. People with anxiety are extremely prone to dysfunctional breathing. Also people with heart disease, people with sleep apnea, or with chronic long-term illness from many different body systems, you know, you will find a greater incidence of dysfunctional breathing. So just trying to get a handle on it, you know, as Jonine mentioned before, I did do a PhD on dysfunctional breathing. So, you know, I developed sort of a model for talking about it and thinking about it. And these would probably be the main things. Okay, so dysfunctional breathing is multidimensional. It's about breathing.
Sorry, Roselle.
Yes, Johnny.
So sorry to interrupt you, Roselle. But if you could click the top of your screen, because it's got the green band saying Zoom meetings, and we think it must be on.
Oh yes, I've got it. Of course.
Yeah, it's just that they're not seeing the top of the slide. Thanks so much. Apologies. Thanks, Ro.
My apologies for not seeing that. Okay, so dysfunctional breathing doesn't have ears. I'm going to talk about what that is. And there's an excessive amount of discomfort in the body, which is breathing discomfort, but there'll also be other symptoms in the body. So let's look at this whole idea of dysfunctional breathing being multidimensional. So this comes out of research. It might seem complicated, but it actually tidies things up nicely. So dysfunctional breathing is multidimensional, meaning that it's got, you know, three overlapping areas that can be disordered or not working properly. One might be the biochemical, and that's about how well your body regulates its oxygen or carbon dioxide on a day-to-day basis. You know, how well your breathing helps to regulate and maintain your pH, your acidity or alkalinity. That's that dimension. Very important, because we know that breathing is a lot about taking in oxygen, getting rid of carbon dioxide and maintaining your pH in that around that perfect 7.4 range. Breathing is also biomechanical. You know, when you're breathing, it's a pump. It's about the action of certain muscles contracting and letting go. Your diaphragm moving, this huge dome that moves up and down. And it's about the, you know, this pump moving air, but also moving fluid, cerebrospinal fluid, blood, lymphatic fluid. And then another aspect of breathing dysfunction is the psychophysiological, that aspect of breathing, which is about perception and interoception and sensation, sense of control, the conditioned behaviors around breathing, and about the interactions between breathing and the brain and the autonomic nervous system. So this idea that breathing is dysfunctional because it doesn't fulfill its primary or secondary functions. So the primary functions of breathing would be, you know, biomechanical and biochemical. So, you know, the pumping of air and blood and fluid and the exchange of oxygen, carbon dioxide, they're primary functions. But all these secondary functions of breathing are also really incredibly important. You think about one function of breathing is self-regulation. From the beginning of time, people have used the breath to calm, to become present, to regulate their emotions or to energize themselves. It is a function of breathing. And there's also the role of breathing within speech and vocalization. And then the rhythms of breathing impact on many other sorts of rhythms in the body. And as we've mentioned before, you know, the movements of fluids. And breathing is a movement that influences other movements, other patterns of movement. So breathing, the way a person breathes has a big impact on whether they have spinal stability and good motor control. So you need good breathing to be able to have these secondary functions of breathing operating properly. So dysfunctional breathing is breathing that's maladaptive, okay? So I say it doesn't have ears. That's an acronym that stands for this. So dysfunctional breathing is maladaptive. So it's not efficient, adaptive, appropriate, responsive, or supportive. Okay, so there's no perfect way of breathing. There's no perfect way of breathing. Like, we shouldn't all be breathing 6 breaths per minute, always into the lower rib cage and belly, through the nose, regularly, evenly, and so on. Because breathing is supposed to change. Breathing is supposed to be flexible and to change according to the changing needs of the individual and to changes in the internal and external environment. Also, your breathing needs to respond to what's happening in other body systems. So this is kind of the dysfunctional breathing idea in a nutshell, and I've a little bit raced through that. But the thing is that, you know, we know that breathing has been used across culture and for over a very long time, you know, as this tool for self-regulation, mindfulness, meditation, and so on. But interestingly, a lot of people actually don't find that the breath is a good anchor. They find that they go to a meditation class or a yoga class, or they work with a somatic therapist, and they don't want to focus on the breath because the breath makes them uncomfortable. And there was this one little research study by Anderson and Farb in 2018, where they looked at what people's preferred anchors of meditation were, and they found that 41% chose the breath, but 51% of people did not. So the majority of people chose a different anchor. And perhaps some of this had to do with the type of training that they had, or, you know, something like that, you know, the school of meditation that they followed. But I know from my own personal experience and from talking to other meditation and mindfulness teacher that there are people who just cannot be with their breath. And a lot of people don't realize it. There are real reasons for this, and it's because the breathing is dysfunctional in one of its dimensions. So let's have a look at these three dimensions and how they impact on the mindfulness, meditation, self-regulation sort of experience. So to be able to effectively use breathing for self-regulation, mindfulness and stress reduction, you need three main things. The first is accurate perception. So you need to be able to accurately perceive your breath, meaning that you don't over-perceive it or under-perceive it. So this has been studied quite a lot. There are definitely people who over-perceive their breath. So they're too sort of aware of slight, you know, nuances in the breath, particularly in the sense of minor discomforts associated with the feeling of not being able to be satisfied with their respiration, not being able to get enough air, or judging their breath as not being right. You know, some of these people have a history of asthma or COPD, or they may have had issues early in life where something has threatened the breathing in the airway. And sometimes what those people do is they begin to get oversensitive, over-perceive the breath and any discomforts associated with them. And then you get people who are under-perceivers of the breath. And these are people who have a sort of alixithymia, in that they really don't feel the breath. And it's hard to bring them to an embodiment experience through the breath because they just don't feel it. It's boring. It doesn't interest them. They'll even get sort of agitated and upset at you when you start talking about, now just focus on your breath. They say, I don't know what you're talking about. Okay, so accurate perception is one aspect. The other aspect is pleasantness. And again, there's a lot of research on this, just showing that the ability to experience breathing sensations as pleasant or unthreatening is a major factor in whether people are able to use their breath as a tool for self-regulation. And another is this thing called sense of control. And some people with their breath, particularly if they've had respiratory ailments or cardiovascular ailments or nervous system conditions, they often, their breath just doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel appropriate. It's not flexible in that it doesn't do what they want it to do. So it's not responsive in the way that they want it to be. And in my experience, it's not so uncommon. But people will often give up on using breath as an anchor for meditation if they have any of these issues, preferring to use something else, when really it's quite possible to work with breathing to improve its functionality so that then it becomes, you know, a valuable tool again. So I just wanted to go back a moment and talk about this issue of pleasantness versus unpleasantness of body sensations. So pleasurable sensations, I think I heard a little bit of Johnine talking about joy, and this is linked. Joy and pleasure are cousins, maybe the same thing. But pleasurable sensations, they act on the brain in a particular way. And particularly pleasurable sensations that are associated with the satisfaction of homeostatic needs, you know, like drinking when you're very thirsty, eating when you're very hungry, taking a breath when you've held your breath for a while, or when you haven't been able to take a breath and suddenly you can. You know, that is extremely pleasurable, but it has some very, very salutogenic or, you know, health promoting effects on the brain. Relaxes you straight away, but also it kind of tweaks your brain function in a way that promotes healthy function. Whereas unpleasantness of respiratory sensation, when someone is finding the breath unpleasant, focusing on the breath doesn't make it a good tool for relaxation and self-regulation. It's kind of obvious, I suppose, except that people will sometimes try and force it or judge themselves when really there's often an issue underlying all this that needs to be dealt with. But when you focus on pleasant sensations and amplify them, then the breath becomes an even more powerful tool for self-regulation and, altered states. So this was some research that was done back in 2013 by Brewer, Davison and Goldstein, just comparing inexperienced with experienced meditators, showing that the activation of the cingulate gyrus, which is a kind of a limbic system structure where breath is perceived, but also a lot of sensations get processed in that part of the brain. They found that the activation was always higher in experienced meditators. But when those experienced meditators consciously generated within themselves feelings of interest, wonder, and joy, the brain effects were much more powerful. So the point being that functional breathing feels pleasant because breathing responds as expected. And so controlling breathing increases the sense of calm, safety, and actually connection to oneself and the experience of the present moment. Whereas dysfunctional breathing, focus on breath isn't pleasant because the breathing doesn't respond as expected, and attempting to control the breath actually makes people feel more agitated and perhaps even unsafe, and certainly more disconnected from themselves. So let's look at the biomechanical aspects of breathing. So, we said that breathing is a neuromuscular activity, it comes about because muscles contract and relax to change the shape and size of the intrathoracic cavity. Yeah, the space for the air gets bigger, smaller, changes shape because of muscles. And when people have dysfunctional breathing, often what they'll develop is this thing that's actually got a name. It's called neuromechanical uncoupling. So they develop a situation where the sensory and the motor system are out of whack. So I'll explain a little bit more about this, but it's like often what's associated with this is respiratory muscles being short and hypertonic. So when the brain sends a signal to muscles to contract, to take a breath, the muscles don't respond as expected. And because the brain has sent a copy of the message it sent to the muscles to another part of the brain called the sensory cortex, when you take a breath, the breath taken, if it doesn't match the breath expected, your brain feels out of kilter and you'll feel breathless and uncomfortable. This is really common in people with dysfunctional breathing. It's a neuromuscular factor. And then on top of this, the psychophysiological layering comes into it. Another biomechanical aspect of breathing is this functional irregularity. So people's breathing can be too irregular or too regular, okay? Chaotic or too regular. Both are a problem. So what you want in functional breathing is functional irregularity. And of course, you always want this thing called sense of control. So in all the different types of dysfunctional breathing for all the three dimensions, a lot of it comes back to this sense of control, and this sense of control is linked to the feeling of appropriate flexibility and responsiveness of the breathing. Okay, so this sensory motor mismatch. Imagine that you start up here in this upper corner, where you've got increased breathing drive, and you might have an increased breathing drive because of anxiety or something's happened to put you in a state of arousal. And that increased breathing drive, the natural response is that there will be tension in respiratory muscles. If that increased breathing drive is maintained, those respiratory muscles can stay chronically tense. And then you develop this condition called dynamic hyperinflation, where the muscles stay chronically short. And short muscles are functionally weak, okay, meaning that they don't respond to the signals from the brain to contract. So that's where you end up with that situation that I talked about before called neuromechanical uncoupling. And neuromechanical uncoupling makes your breathing feel unpleasant. And when your breathing is unpleasant, guess what? You'll always feel like you're not getting enough air. And so you'll chronically have this sense of wanting to take more air and trying to breathe a little harder and this increased breathing drive. And so you get a vicious circle where things kind of go round and around. So now I wanted to talk for a moment about functional irregularity. So breathing should be relatively stable, but not at the cost of responsiveness. So one thing I've come across in my work and also in the research is that some people, in trying to control their anxiety or in trying to sort of, you know, just calm themselves or just feel good, will over control their breath all the time. And this over control of the breathing can end up making the breathing too static or stuck. It loses its functionality and responsiveness because some irregularity of breathing is normal. A sigh, for example, as most of you know, can be a really beautiful thing. So we know that slow breathing, you know, at the rate of about 5.5 to 6 breaths per minute, you know, the 10-second breath cycle, we know that this, you know, does all kinds of really interesting things to our brain. And it gives a big synchronization, you know, of the brain that's kind of exponential when you slow your breath to that extent. And your vagus gets mega switched on so that you have big fluctuations in heart rate variability. This is always a sign that cardiac vagal tone has increased. So it's a good thing. So slowing the breath and regulating the breath really has its place. I'm not saying it doesn't, but we mustn't get caught up in thinking that we need to over-control the breath. The other thing is people whose nervous system has become very dysregulated because of trauma, overwhelm, they can develop a kind of a problem with breathing control that's really deep-seated in the brainstem. And there's a sort of excessive irregularity in their breathing. It's not a habit. And it's not just from thinking. It really comes from the brainstem. And it's known because what the research has shown is that there are problems in other functions that have rhythms too, and other homeostatic systems go out of whack, like the balance system will go out of whack, and people get really poor heart rate variability. But in a healthy person, you still have irregularity, but it's just not as chaotic. So let's have a look at the biochemical aspects of breathing. So we know that people in health have a pH of around 7.4. Their carbon dioxide level is from 37 to 42 or 44 millimeters of mercury. But someone who's healthy, they have flexibility in their chemoreceptors. That means they can tolerate an increase or a decrease in CO2 without getting all dysregulated. But people with dysfunctional breathing sometimes cannot. So they don't cope well with certain types of breathing techniques that are very strong, or they don't cope very well with conditions that challenge their breathing, like strong exercise or even sleep. So hyperventilation can be really useful. You know, you've got breathing techniques like the Wim Hof method and holotropic breathing, breath work that use hyperventilation. And, you know, in a setting where it's used in a controlled way, it can be all kinds of benefits. Someone who's chronically hyperventilating generally has problem with breathing regulation that makes their breathing very unstable. So they, without going into too much detail, and I know I don't have much time left, one of the big effects of hyperventilation is that it decreases cerebral blood flow. So in some people that leads to problems. It might be a seizures, or it can just increase dissociative states. Also, someone who is chronically in respiratory alkalosis, which is what happens when you hyperventilate, they can end up with a cell that's very acidic. And that cell develops a kind of a sick cell syndrome, where the cell itself loses its bicarbonate and it also loses essential minerals. So the person can be chronically tired, and their mitochondria, their energy production systems, go right down, and they can develop a range of different disorders. And so we know that some people prone to anxiety and panic have overactivity of these acid sensing portions of their brain. And they often respond very poorly to any rise of CO2. So when they're given breathing exercises to relax them that slow and reduce their breathing, that can actually bring on their panic and anxiety. So in people with panic disorder, and also certain types of sleep apnea, a little rise in CO2 will trigger a severe reaction in terms of panic, or it'll initiate an apnea event in someone during sleep. So the point being that what you ultimately want to do is improve people's chemoreceptor flexibility. So ultimately a healthy person should be someone who can use strong breathing techniques and reduced breathing techniques and breath holding, and be able to upregulate the resilience of their whole system. But someone who's got dysfunctional breathing, sometimes they just need to be taken back to more baby steps for a while until the breathing system is reset. So I'm going to skip over a few slides, I think, because I wanted to talk a bit about, how brain rhythms. I'll just mention that brain rhythms are very well synchronized with breathing rhythms when breathing is nasal, but not when breathing is through the mouth. And that's why it's great to do most of your breathing through your nose. But you know what? Occasional mouth breathing might also be good for the brain. There's some research showing that mouth breathing occasionally can actually boost the oxygen to the prefrontal cortex. So in the end, what we want with healthy breathing is that we want breathing that's adaptive, responsive, and that changes in response to changing internal, external conditions. So breathing is a regulator and an indicator. This particular little model was from Jan van Dixhorn. And I just think it kind of sums it up beautifully, because you've got breathing is affected by any mental, physical tension state, but it can also impact on those. So breathing is a regulator and an indicator. But when breathing is dysfunctional, this doesn't happen so well. So the breathing therapy I call integrative breathing therapy. You know, after decades of working with all kinds of different breath work, I've sort of gone, oh, well, you know, everything's got its place, just a matter of using them appropriately. So I think that it's a matter of, first of all, recognize that there is something called dysfunctional breathing, and learn how to recognize it and learn how to correct it. And also, you want variety to improve resilience. So we can do this breathing practice, or we can have questions. So it's one or the other. What would you like to do? I'll do both. I'll give you 1 minute of this. How's that? Jonine, what do you think?
Yes, no, you lead on that. There are some questions in the Q&A. I might have a look to see if there's some matchups give you, we'll come back after your exercise.
Okay, terrific. So here's the little exercise. So This is an alternating dynamic and relaxed practice. The idea being that dynamic practices are great, relaxed practices are great. Sometimes the combination of the two is the best thing. So let's try this. We'll start with a dynamic practice with an inhale focus. So we'll do 15 sniffing breaths like this. Remembering to expand the nostril. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. Now relax. So 5 slow, relaxed breaths at the resonance frequency, which is in, 2, 3, 4, out, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, in, 2, 3, 4, out, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Just keep it going and around about that speed. Just relaxing into the breath. Feeling the beautiful sensations of the breath. Enjoying the pleasure of that. And now we'll do some strong breathing with an exhale focus. Breathing actively out and passively in like this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Remember to inhale. 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. Now some slow, relaxed breaths like you did before, and just stay with that breathing now, staying with that. And now we'll just come back to the group all together and I will answer some questions.
Great. So there are some specific questions there, and I probably want to remind everybody that you will get a link to Rosalba's website, and via that you can, I think, Rosalba, you'll be open to answering some extended questions. There it is there. So Yolanda's posted that in the chat. Amber says it's also interested in therapeutic breathing for chronic fatigue, Rosalba, and pain, restoring energy without overdoing. Any recommendations for releasing tissues around the lungs? A couple of questions about the lungs.
Yeah.
What is the function of the yawn if you're yawning a lot?
Sure. Well, let me answer the yawning one because it's a smaller one, easier to answer than the other. So, yeah, yawning and sighing, very similar. So they both act as neural resetters. So when we're moving from one state to another, we'll often yawn or sigh. And so yawning and sighing are very functional and good, but occasionally they will be dysfunctional. So when you get someone who's always yawning, always sighing, they can never stop. You start talking about breathing and they instantly start to sigh and sigh excessively, or they just start yawning as soon as you start talking about the breath. It's usually a sign that there's dysfunctional breathing. It's one of the things I look for, actually.
Right. I think this is an important message because I think it's really relative to these times, Rosalba, where someone says they work in a hospital and for the past couple of weeks they've had to wear a mask when working with patients about 5 hours a day, Rosalba. You may have already had a question in practice.
Sure.
So luckily not the whole day, but in the evening she's saying her breathing is dysfunctional, imbalanced. Do you have any suggestions for best practice to balance my breathing after work and for people who are currently wearing masks at work? I think that's an important one.
Do you know, I did a lot of measuring of people who were wearing masks, and patients often come in to see me, you know, and I'd have them wear a mask in the consultation. And often they'd say, I can't, you know, the mask freaks me out. So I would measure their oxygen and carbon dioxide. And often, you know, when people saw that their oxygen and carbon dioxide was normal, and I explained that it's just really about the sensory thing, about the different airflow, and to just kind of relax into that, that helped some people. It's kind of fatiguing, though. I found myself that, you know, wearing a mask for a long period of time is quite fatiguing. And I think that, for example, the little practice that we just did now, I think is a really good one. Do you know where you do a little bit of dynamic practice, wake up the breathing system, you know, with an inhale and an exhale, and then balance it with some slow, relaxed, super calm breathing. I think that would be a good thing. Very often people who don't cope with masks have some dysfunctional breathing, you know.
Yes, okay. This will probably be both. Do you have any tips for those with asthma and also a breathing tip when having anxiety? So there are a couple of questions around anxiety.
Yeah. Do you know, on my website, I've got a good blog. You know, great. Because people so often ask about anxiety, it's hard in the little time that we've got left to do the topic justice. So I think I'm going to put a longer article, perhaps on the as part of the embodiment package. That will be some great anxiety.
Okay, so and hopefully everybody in the chat got we have got Rosalba's website address in there. Someone also asked, Amber, my left lung doesn't inflate the same as the right. I have an ongoing painful shoulder there too. Exhale is often not as long as inhale unless I work on it, but hard and have to have a relax lot first. Can you help? Recommendations for practices? Sure. Would this be another email or?
Just very quickly, most people have an asymmetrical diaphragm. And so, you know, there'll be a bit of a twist on the rib cage, and it's really common. And it's amazing when you really improve diaphragm function and you really improve it, not just deep breathing to hyperinflate overinflated lungs, but when you really work with relaxing the diaphragm and also strengthening it, then you will find that very often the asymmetry through the rib cage improves. It's possible.
Right. Yes, I'd concur with that. Gosh, Jenny, if you have kids going blue and breath holding, what's best to do?
You know, breath holding in children is kind of a bit out of my scope. It's a bit of a special circumstance, and I don't want to answer that one. Sorry.
Okay. Yes. What about people holding breath while doing a task, writing, concentrating? Have some clients doing this. I think that would be a fairly common one. So maybe we'll make this the last question.
Okay. That's extremely common. This is such an interesting one. And it's part of, do you know Pavlov, of Pavlov's dog, Mr. Conditioning, Russian scientist Pavlov? Okay. So Pavlov actually named that. He called it the orienting reflex. And when you're very focused on a task, you will hold your breath as part of the concentration. But it's also part of, when that's overexpressed, that holding your breath, it's often part of too much anticipation, too little presence, too much going forward into the future with something, okay? It's called anticipatory pause as well. So it's all actually comes back to learning, practicing presence and embodiment.
Yes, wonderful. Thanks, Rosalba. And I will come back to you after another sort of information for participants. I will come back to you in a minute for your top tip. So you'll have the last word on that. And so if there's any last questions, remember, if you've got any other questions, the links show where you can join the coffee break rooms and ask questions there. Again, you can go to Rosalba's website and find out her information. Hopefully you'll have that last slide too for perhaps when we come back, Rosalba, just in case people have missed it. No, it's all in there. Coffee break portal. Yep. There's the Facebook group for the embodiment conference, so you can share how you found this workshop, or Rosalba will be listening in on that too. So if you want to make a comment on her live feed, and she could probably go in there and answer that. And I just want to really say something about considering the purchase of the library, not to do a big sell, but what's really made this extraordinary conference, embodiment conference possible, other sponsors, which we respected and gave time to and acknowledged at the beginning, but also the purchase of the library. So there's a lot of people who, for whom this work has reached, that would not normally have been able to access it. If you're in a position and see the value of having a lifetime access to the library, i.e. all of the trainers and like there's 1,000 workshops that you can ongoingly reference. I already know those that I've saved and I think I want to go back and re-listen to those tips. You know, I know a lot about Ros Elba's work and work with breathwork, but, you know, she's given me information there that, you know, I can't absorb in an hour, but really want to have access to ongoingly. So there's a great deal up until October 25th. I think we can pretty much purchase the library at half cost. So please consider that. It's a gift to all the hard work of everybody that's come together to put this on. And it just might be your way of contributing if you can. Otherwise, this video will be online free for 48 hours. It's on live Facebook feed, so you'll be able to watch it again anyway and or send it to people. You must know, we all know so many people that have got dysfunctional breathing patterns. And as you all got in the chat, you know, it's so valuable to understand how this extraordinary mechanism in our body works. So thank you all. So last final tip, Ros Elba. Well, and you've got more than one sentence because you've actually got 3 minutes.
Oh, do I? Oh, should have slowed down.
Two and a half.
But just remember that respect your breathing. Your breathing is linked to everybody's system. So often what your breathing is doing, breathing is your history. The way you're breathing is a product of your present and your past. And healthy breathing, functional breathing, is responsive and changeable and adaptive. Don't get hung up on breathing in some perfect way.
Beautiful. Yes, that's such a gift. We sort of kick in there to that sort of perfectionism. It's why I really like people to use their breath to access that joyful, relaxed state to reset their nervous system, especially. And we were having a chat about that while you were busy putting it on. So thank you so much for that, Ros Elba, that wealth of information. Everybody's in the chat saying how valuable it was. Excellent information. So thank you all for participating.